Thank you, Shoots. Welcome back. Welcome back to KKCR. It is top of the hour, and you are listening to KKCR Hanalei, KAQA, Kilauea, K224CQ Molawa, and K284AL Hanalei Eva. And I'm out of the box.
Hey, Rich.
Hey.
It's such an honor to have you. Awesome.
How you doing today?
I'm great.
Right on.
I'm so happy to have you here as my engineer today.
Yes, yes.
I'll be in the captain's chair.
All this stuff.
Like, it's awesome, man. All those things I can't. I don't know what's going on over there.
Captain Rick.
Yeah. Well, here we go. Let me tell you, folks, we'll get a little more business out of the way in a minute, but it's important to let you know, today I got a jam-packed show. I'm really excited about it. Top of the hour, from 4 to 4:30, we're going to be talking with Allison Fraley, the Solid Waste Program Coordinator for the County of Kauai. And we're going to be talking about the Pay-As-You-Throw program, which is coming up on a deadline soon. From 4:30 to 4:45, I'm going to have Esther and I'm going to have Ms. McKenna Pasqua are going to be in there. They are both people contributing to the fabulous play, Beauty and the Beast, which is playing one more weekend down here at the War Memorial in Lihue. And then 5:30, I have Kabi Nupain, of the Nepalese Friends of Hawaii, going to be calling in, and we're going to be talking about the earthquake in Nepal and fundraising efforts that are going on to help those wonderful, wonderful people in a very, very, very difficult situation there. 5:30 to 6 o'clock, I have Greg Holtzman and Dave Stewart coming in, and we're going to be talking about fisheries and the whale sanctuary preservation movement and some of the challenges that are being faced by that. But first, I'm going to throw it back to Cousin Rich.
Out of the box. Let's take care of some business.
We'll be back.
Okay.
So they paved paradise, put up a parking lot with a pink hotel.
And Out of the Box is made possible by listeners like you in partnership with Kalahea Chiropractic and Hawaii Gaga.
Kalahea Wellness Center, natural pain relief services, providing gentle chiropractic acupuncture, therapeutic massage, nutritional wellness, postural training, cold laser therapy, and spinal decompression. Open Monday through Friday, now a second location in Kapa'a, 822-0711, or Southside Center at 332-5580, or online at kalaheochiropractic.com.
HawaiiGaga.com, Hawaii Vacation Rental Directory and Vacation Guide.
Hey,
a proud sponsor
out?
Of Kauai Community Radio, Hawaii Gaga also publishes the Kauai GPS Tour Guide, an audio tour of Kauai for iPhones. More information online at HawaiiGaga.com.
And mahalo for supporting Kauai Community Radio, and I say as well the views and opinions are those of the speakers and do not represent those of KKCR, its board, its members, its underwriters, or its programmers. Well, great to see you again, Rick C.
Well, thank you very much. Yeah, I'm excited to be here. Every couple of weeks now, I've been sitting in for Jimmy Trujillo, who I think will be filtering back this way in next month, which starts tomorrow.
Oh, wow. You were just like a fill-in, huh?
I'm just a fill-in guy, you know, just call with anybody they can find.
You're doing quite a marvelous job.
Thank you, sir. Thank you. I appreciate that. And, you know, it's been great. We're waiting on the call of Allison. So, Allison, if you're listening, call on in. Be happy to have you on the air. We can have this slot talking about the Pay-As-You-Throw program going until 4 o'clock today. You know, what's been really great here, Rich, is the public affairs hosts have been really working together. So, Felicia and Jonathan, and we even have Dave Jerome, we have Donovan, and other people whose names aren't popping in my head right now. Oh, Tracy, of course, and who are helping out to build a better public affairs department and make sure we are doing our best for the people of Kauai to give access, give interesting topics. And, I'm really stoked about that. Do we have Allison on the phone?
No, we don't. I picked up the line and the line went blank, so perhaps she'll call again.
Okay,
maybe that wasn't Allison.
Maybe it was. Uh-huh. Well, anyway. Well, we've been meaning to talk about on the air, And I say the public affairs host here on KKCR. We've been wanting to talk about inviting more people into the public affairs department. I think we would like to have women's voices on the air more. And I think that, there we go. Oh, there goes the dogs. Okay, very good. Thank you very much. And sorry. it's community radio.
And guess what,
dogs
Rick?
Are on in. What, Rick?
We have Allison on the air.
Very good. Well, anyway, to finish my thought, we're looking for more people to get involved in the public affairs department. If you're interested in working behind the scenes, if you have a face for radio like the rest of us, give us a call down at the station sometime or call Laura, 826-7774, and maybe we'll see if we can hook you up.
All right.
Allison.
Allison, good afternoon.
Good afternoon. How are you doing?
Allison Fraley is the Solid Waste Program Coordinator for the County of Kauai. Wow, that's a mouthful.
I know, isn't it?
And it's good. So how?
I might take a different title if I could.
You would? I see. We could do an acronym. SWPC.
Yeah.
Just, I guess that doesn't work too well. You know. So, Allison, you've been doing this for a while, as I understand it.
Oh, working for the county?
Well, in that role, right?
Yeah. Well, I was initially the recycling coordinator,
uh-huh.
And then I got promoted into garbage, but also doing recycling as well. So it's been 15 years.
Oh, what a way to look at it. I got from recycling to garbage. Well, speaking of recycling, let's jump right into it. You have helped put together the Pay As You Throw program.
Yes.
Okay. Well, tell us, what is that? I mean, now, first of all, we have a deadline coming up. I think it's May 15th for people on Kauai to choose their cart size. Like myself, I have the large cart that I am paying for, and I'm going to be given an option to either go have no pickup, no cart, or be given a smaller cart size. But before, you know, can you just give us a little background on the program and why the program's been developed?
Oh, yes. Okay, great. So 3 years ago, actually, we initiated a flat fee for refuse service. Before that, garbage, as much as you wanted, was put out on the road for us to pick up at no cost to the taxpayer, no out-of-pocket cost. Of course, it costs money to pick up trash. And actually, the cost per household is about $55 a month. And so, you know, more than 3 years ago, people were paying nothing. So there was no out of their pocket, at least.
Wait. $55 a month. Okay, I'm jumping in right here.
Taxpayer dollars. That's how it was paid before anyone paid out of pocket.
You're saying that's what it cost the county, or
yes.
That's what it cost the homeowner?
The county.
Wow.
But it's paid through the general fund, so
Woo.
Through tax dollars. That's
okay.
How that had been funded before there was any fees to customers.
Mm-hmm.
And so we, 3 years ago, adopted what we call the residential refuse collection assessment, which is a fee on your tax bill that was a flat rate for you to get garbage service. And at that time, we did initiate this opt-out option, and about 10% of our customers said, we don't want you to pick up our trash. I will take it to the landfill or the transfer station myself. And in that case, we charged $6 a month to those customers. And initially, our flat fee was $12 a month, inclusive of that base fee for someone to get garbage service. And what this did from a waste diversion perspective was make people aware that throwing away trash costs money. And so that was our initial step. And then a couple of years ago, we received a grant, well, not directly, but an indirect grant from ETA to study how we could do a pay-as-you-throw system on Kauai, where residents are charged a variable rate for their service. So the more trash you produce, the more you have to pay. If you're able to cut down your trash, then you would pay less. Normally, you have these pay-as-you-throw programs when you have curbside recycling right there for you, because then your garbage fees are associated with cost, and then the recycling and the green waste it doesn't have a cost that you're aware of or that you have to pay for directly. So this helps people, reduce their trash. Now, in our case, we don't have curbside recycling or green waste. And, you know, at first I was hesitant to participate in the study because I thought, oh, so in a while we'll, we can do pay-as-you-throw, not now. Well, it turns out once we got a consultant, we said yes to this free study, we got a consultant on board. They said, well, you know, you could do your first phase of pay-as-you-throw without any curbside options and just allow people to get a smaller trash cart and then pay less. And, you know, normally people reduce their trash as a result because they have it. There's an economic incentive to make less trash.
Okay, so if people, so let's say they just say, you know, I don't, they go with the opt-out program.
Mm-hmm.
What's the deal? I mean, why are they still charge money?
Well, because the base assessment helps us to cover some of the costs of operating the transfer stations and the landfill. And that allows us, because you know, in some communities, when you go to the transfer station, you have to pay a fee at the gates because they cost money to operate. Well, we didn't want to do that. We decided that if everybody, every dwelling on Kauai is automatically, through the taxes, assessed this base assessment, the $6 fee, then we won't have to charge anyone at the gate. Now, because when we implemented the pay-as-you-throw, I think people got confused and thought that we would start charging fees at the gate, and so that's been a problem. It was a problem when we were introducing this legislation, and it's still kind of a misconception that lingers. But before, when I was telling you the history of the program, I didn't really mention what the real fees are now, because we went through a legislative process. It took a while, and you know, the study that we got was different than the actual law that passed. But let me just cover what the actual fees are. So starting July is when the program kicks, and as you said, if you don't want trash service, it's $6 a month. Initially, like I said, 10% of our customers chose that. We're seeing a few more people deciding that they want to take trash. Sorry, can you hear me?
I can still hear you.
Okay. And then, but if you want service, if you take our smaller cart that we're just introducing now, it's 64 gallons. It's equivalent to 2 standard trash can. Your fee is going to be $10 a month, and that is inclusive of the $6 base assessment.
Okay.
And then if you want the 96-gallon cart, which our customers already have if they're in the automated area, and if they're not automated right now, if they're on the manual program, they can put up to 3 standard trash cans out at the curb every month. That fee for the 96-gallon cart is $18 a month.
Yeah, well, that's kind of a big difference. And I know, so I have the 96
uh-huh.
a gallon container, and I couldn't fill that in 3 weeks or something. Unless, I've been doing some construction, but really, even with that, there's not a lot of material that's been coming out. So
yeah.
It's way more than I need. So I'm not going to pay $18 a month.
Yeah, you did fill out the form for the smaller cart.
I'm going to call my attorney about that. I want to see where you... Of course I did, Allison.
Yeah.
How dare you?
I want to... Thanks for bringing up that it's a big difference, because that was intentional. But the reason they're such... So the size difference is, you know, one-third. You know, the small cart is 64 and the big cart is 96, so the big cart's one-third larger,
right.
But the price differential is 80% more.
Yeah, yeah.
And the reason for that is to motivate people to look at the smaller cart, make some changes in their life if they have to reduce their waste, which that's what studies have shown, that when pay-as-you-throw legislation is introduced, that there is a 17% decrease in the amount of trash a household makes. And so when we are dialoguing with customers, when we talked about this legislation at council, we're bringing up the fact that, you know, yeah, you don't have curbside, but we have 8 recycling locations where you can take your recycling throughout Kauai. We have 8 redemption centers where you can get money back for redeemable beverage containers. We have a free backyard composting program where you can get one of our bins and you can compost your food and yard waste. What can you do
right.
to change the amount of waste that you make? And so that's why, you know, we have that 80% differential to really financially motivate people to make less trash.
Right. That's really good. Now you said $55 per person, per family, I guess you said, household.
Per household.
Per household, mm-hmm. on Kauai is what it was costing the county before. So with this program implemented and the structure that you're saying 10% is going to opt out, XYZ, the other percentages, what do you expect it's going to be costing the county still? Because I assume this isn't going to cover all the costs.
Right. So that's a tricky question. So the cost will remain the same. It's 55% of 50, I'm sorry, $55 a month, but how that's covered may or may not change. So right now, you know, we bring in about, I would have to look at my figures for how much we bring in, but so we're covering, like, if a household's paying $12 a month, right, under the current system,
yes,
they're only covering $12 of that $55 mm-hmm, cost, and the mm-hmm. rest is covered by general fund.
Wow.
Now, it's going to, how much revenue we get from the pay-as-you-throw system is going to, we're going to know that once everybody chooses their cart size.
Right.
So we're not sure exactly how many people will choose the larger, how many will choose the smaller, how many will opt out. When all of that information comes in, we'll be able to say this percentage of the cost of the program is covered by fees, and this percentage of the cost of the program is covered by the general fund.
Well, I mean, people who are going to maybe, you know, complain about the cost that it's going to be, or should know, I think, if I'm understanding you, that they're only going to really paying a small percentage of the fee, or a percentage, let's say, not qualified, just say a percentage of the fee, what it costs to get rid of their share of the trash.
Yes, so only
as a household.
But of course, the argument is, well, I'm already paying for it because I'm paying taxes. So we hear a lot of that.
Mm-hmm. And what do you say to that then? It's a pretty good argument. I changed my mind. How dare you ask me for money?
Yeah.
Okay, come on.
Well,
and the reply is,
I mean, first of all, this is the law, and, you know, the law passed for a reason. We're trying to make a difference. We're trying
right.
to get people aware of how much waste they're producing, have a personal accountability and
right.
responsibility for that. And these programs have proven to work. There's more than 7,000 in the United States. They're proven to reduce the amount of trash a household makes, not
mm-hmm.
only by through recycling activities and composting activities, but also through source reduction and reuse. So people, instead of just throwing a big load of old stuff into their trash when they're doing spring cleaning, they're like, wait a minute, I could take this for, you know, to a thrift store. I could reuse this. I could, you know, I could buy less stuff so I don't have so much trash. So those are the choices that people are making to be able to reduce their trash.
I think that's great. And I think that, you know, really it comes down to people being more responsible. And
yeah.
as we look at the world and the changes that are going on, and a lot of people talk about, you know, government off my back, or I want to be independent, or whatever. Well, then you got to take more responsibility, you know.
Yeah.
So,
what
so
we've
I
seen
like
in
that.
Other communities is, like, you know, more advanced diversion communities like Seattle.
Mm-hmm.
They are charging $60 a month for trash service.
Uh-huh.
It's totally paid through user fees. Now, we haven't made any commitment to do that. We're not there yet. We're following a plan, and that plan actually called for the 96-gallon cart to be $21 a month and for the 64-gallon cart to be $12 a month.
But you put your foot down, right? You put your foot down. You said, no way am I going to make the consumer, the customer, the residents of Hawaii pay that, right?
Well, I mean, that was a legislative process. There were people,
right.
there were council people all over that, you know, all over in different sides of the argument.
Yes.
So it was a very heated debate about how these fees ended up.
Oh, okay. I'm trying
yeah.
to give you all the credit there, Allison. You know, I opened the door. You didn't walk through. It's okay. It's fine with me. You know, that's how it goes. So listen, so I think we do have a caller wants to ask a question. Quick, we're going to say concise questions for concise answers, 826-7771.
All righty.
Here we go. You're on Out of the Box.
Good afternoon.
Can you hear me?
Yes. Go ahead with a quick question for Allison.
Yeah, we received our bin last weekend out of kickoff. I think there were six guys out there delivering on a Saturday and Sunday. And we see we're not going to be able to use these things until July. I'm wondering why they're out there. Are they getting paid time and a half to distribute these things?
Yes.
Allison?
So, yes, we are receiving...
Why are they out there so early then? Why on a Saturday and Sunday? Why couldn't they wait till a leap day if we're not going to use it until July?
Hey, thank you for your questions. We're going to let Allison answer that, and you can take her answers on the air. Thank you very much.
Bye. Good question. So, we had to order about 10,000 carts to get enough 96s to handle all of this. And something that we haven't talked about yet is the issue that, half this caller is currently a manual customer. We're going to be transitioning him to the automated collection in July.
Uh-huh.
And we're distributing new carts to about 9,000 customers. And because that's an intensive process to physically go out and, you have to load the carts, you have to assemble the carts, you have to record what cart goes to what address, you have to make sure you hit every household that wants a cart and get the right size to them. This is a very complex undertaking. It's not the people that are delivering the carts are working full-time for the county during the week. We can't do it. We have a normal workload. We can't do it within our normal workload, so we're doing it on the weekends. We're doing it all the way up until July. So, and Kekaha was our very first distribution, and the carts are coming in staggered, and in order to hit everybody, we had to start now. And so I've looked at other how they implement programs. This is not abnormal. This is how it happens. If you have so much to do, you have to start
sure.
early, otherwise it's not going to work.
Okay.
So that's why we're doing it on the weekends. We're concerned that people would use a cart before, would be confused. So what we did was we made this bumper sticker with a message on it that says, don't use the cart until July, right? We had to do a generic bumper sticker at first because of union negotiations, but we're working on a bumper sticker that's specific to you. It's going to say what day you start and what day your collection is, because we have to change all the routes up too, because we're, doing a whole new program. So it's a very complex undertaking, and we're doing the best that we can. Also, another thing that's happening is once we deliver all those carts, then we have to go into the communities that already have the carts and switch them out. We have to wash the old carts. We have to wash carts that have been in storage. We're reusing some of our recycling carts that we used for our pilot program a couple years ago, putting new covers on them, getting them out to customers. I mean, it's a lot of work.
Sounds like a lot to get organized.
Yeah.
Let's go back. I want to make sure we revisit the deadline that's coming up. May 15th is the deadline for people on the island of Kauai to choose their cart size. Is that correct?
Correct.
Okay.
Because May 15th, we have to stick with that deadline because all of this information is going into your real property tax bill, and that isn't collected by us. It's not a manual collection. We actually piggyback onto real property's billing system. So it's not really your taxes. It's just a fee that's on your taxes, and that's saving us a lot of the county and the taxpayers a lot of money in administrative fees. We don't have to have a special collections program to take in the money. We just bill it with real property. That's on a 6-month billing cycle. And so we have to observe a deadline to get all the data into that billing system, so when those tax bills go out, they are accurate. So we started telling people through 2 direct mail notices and all kinds of promotion and advertisement that your decision needs to be made. First, we said March 15th because we have so much to do once we get all the responses, literally thousands of responses to enter manually into a billing system.
Wow. Glad I'm not you.
We did extend the deadline to May 15th, and so that's when we're hoping people would respond. Now, knowing that we were sending something out to 18,000 customers, we needed something that we call a default, so that if people don't respond, then that's what we do, because we know not everyone's going to respond, so what do we do if they don't, right? So we set up the default for the cart size for customers that do have service as 96-gallon, because that's exactly what people have now. So when we sent out the notices, we said, you know, let us know if you want the smaller cart or if you want to opt out. If you want the 96-gallon cart, you don't have to do anything.
All right, we got a few minutes left. I want to hit through a few things now.
Okay,
one
sure.
Now, you sent out these notices quite a while ago. I know I got mine months ago, it seems like, and I know that one deadline has passed. So wherever that form is on my desk, it's probably buried down under a few layers of paper. You know what I mean? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
All right. So I'm just playing the average Joe here. My desk is immaculate.
Good for you.
Well, okay. If you believe that, I got a bridge to sell you. Anyway, so now it's coming up. So maybe people are listening going, oh, my God, where is that form? How else can they get the form other than having to dig through the recycling?
Oh, no, please don't dig through anything, people. Yeah. We have it on our website.
Great.
It's kauai.gov/PAYT. That's the acronym for the program, P, pay as you throw, so PAYT.
Got it.
Also, you can call our office. I mean, we have fielded literally thousands of calls. And so the main line, we have a bunch of people working, 241-4841. To call and get information. But, you know, if you have access to a computer, the best thing to do is to go on that website because we have a writable, downloadable form. We do need a signature from the owner. So, you know, because it has to do with their tax bill. So we couldn't take a renter's word for what the owner's tax bill should be.
Yep.
So we do need the owners to respond to us.
Yep.
And, you know, to actually sign the form so we have something on file. Mm-hmm. That says that they did it, and then we will make that change in the system.
All right, then they'll be paying. If they don't respond, they'll be paying the $18. So
yes.
that we agree on. If someone doesn't have a computer, can't get on the internet, wants to get a form, what do they do?
Yeah, we can mail it to you. We can, you know, you can come get it in our office. We've got a lot of people just walking into the office.
Okay, where's your office?
In the round building. Yeah, the round building,
okay.
Suite 295. We're mm-hmm. upstairs, unfortunately. That's hard for some of our customers. We even run down. If people are at the DMV, they can call us. We'll run down and help them. You know, we're trying to do everything we can to accommodate people. This is a really confusing program at this point because of the transition to automated for some customers. I had sent you in preparation for the show, remember I sent you, our fact sheet on that same web page.
Yes.
And, you know, a lot of the complaints and concerns, because we've logged them all, that people have about the program is, oh, automated, I'm afraid of how it's going to work for me, people on flag lots, people with multiple homes on the property, all these concerns about automated refuse as opposed to the pay-as-you-throw system.
So we don't have time to answer those questions,
well, you know,
but where
what?
Do they get
I,
those
I can
answers?
Talk for 10 more minutes if it works into your show.
It doesn't. I have another interview
right,
starting at 4:30. So what I want to, so if they want to answer those questions, they're going to call 241-4841.
Yes,
and
that, please do.
Or they can go to the round building upstairs, the suite 295.
The solid waste office.
Right, and there is an elevator in that building, isn't there?
Yes, there
all
is.
All right. Great. And listen, so I'm just going to throw this criticism to you. This is what I've heard, Allison. So isn't there going to be a problem of more people just throwing their trash on the side of the road? And, you know, they don't want to deal with it. I mean, you know, is this going to cause more littering?
Well, you know, if it were, that probably would have happened initially when we implemented the fee-for-service. That was something that we debated about when initially, because there was legislation to implement that $12, you know, flat fee 3 years ago. And although when we didn't see anything like that happen, nothing significant, you know, it was not a major problem. Now, most illegally dumped materials are bulky items. They're not residential trash. So if you look and you see stuff that's dumped, it's refrigerators and things like that.
Yeah, right.
You know, and what we learned from going through the study process is that surveys of over 1,000 communities have found that concern about illegal dumping is more of a fear than reality. That there are some increases right after programs are implemented, but those problems are usually solved within a matter of months. And some communities even show improvement because people are more accountable for their trash and more aware of what's happening.
So, Allison, is this, as I understand it, is this the first pay-as-you-throw program in the state of Hawaii?
Yes, it is.
So I'm going to say go, Allison Fraley. Thank you very much for calling in on Out of the Box.
Okay,
and,
thank you.
And Allison Fraley has been my guest for the first half hour. She is the Solid Waste Program Coordinator, or the SWPC, down there at the Round Building in room 295 upstairs. And call her if you have questions, 241-4841. And the website again, Allison, is?
It's kauai.gov/PAYT.
That's awesome. Again, thank you so much. A very interesting and innovative program, and I think we all need to take a little bit more responsibility for the things we buy and the things, and now we'll start to think about that more as we have to get rid of these things.
Yes,
it's important.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for the process. I'm sure we'll be talking about this program again. Thank you, Allison,
alrighty.
So much.
Aloha. Uh-huh.
Okay, you go well. Wow.
Woo!
Yeah.
She's got a lot going on there.
And guess what else? We have McKenna Pasqua on the air right now.
McKenna Pasqua.
Right now.
Well, here we go. Ladies and gentlemen, we are going to switch now. I'm Rick C. I'm sitting in for the great Jimmy Trujillo, who will be turning to this chair sometime soon. And I am hosting this show out of the box. I am so pleased to have my engineer, whose cousin Rich, is here with me today. And I thank him for coming in. And now we're going to be talking about one of the things I'm fascinated with here on this little small island here in the middle of the Pacific Ocean. We have so much talent and so many people who want to make theater and play on stage. And so we have talented people like, look, let's talk. Let's give a credit where credit's due. All right. The play I'm talking about, first of all, is Beauty and the Beast. But the overall deal in the context of this is we have this fantastic director and producer, Dennis McGraw. Ladies and gentlemen, Dennis McGraw. Yes, he's that guy works tirelessly, and yeah, I'm sure he puts up with a few tantrums.
Did
not,
you know,
from our next guest, though.
Did you know he was a former DJ?
He was.
He was.
Oh,
he
wow.
hosted a
awesome.
Show on Thursday evenings, Big Bad Review.
Whoa, here on this station?
Right on, yeah.
Wow. They all come through KKCR at some point till they find their niche. Anyway, Dennis McGraw is a very talented guy. And speaking of talent, I have on the line a senior from Waimea High School. Her name is McKenna Pasqua. And McKenna, welcome to Out of the Box. Hey, you there? Okay, we're...
She was there.
She was there.
Yeah.
McKenna, if we lost you, call us back. Is that hold button still a problem for us? No, it's not a problem. Okay, we had a little, but anyway.
Why don't you tell the listeners about KPAC?
Well, here's what I'm going to do. You probably know more about KPAC than I do, my friend. Let me announce the other guest
okay.
that's calling in. It's Esther, and Esther is, and I don't have my notes in front of me to remember her last name, but Esther builds the costumes, and she is amazing. So if you saw Shrek and you saw the dragon and a bunch of other things, you saw Esther's work. And if you've been to Beauty and the Beast, or you will go to Beauty and the Beast, because I strongly encourage it. I saw it last weekend. She built these fantastic costumes. So who do we have, Esther?
We have McKenna.
McKenna. Hello, McKenna.
Hi, McKenna.
Hey, welcome to Out of the Box, McKenna.
It's nice to be here. It's a pleasure talking with you.
Well, it's great. I'm really honored to have you, because you're like one of the stars on Island. I know you're in Beauty and the Beast, and we'll get to talking about that, and hopefully we'll have Esther calling in soon. Hey, Rich, why don't you try? I think I put Esther's number down there. Maybe we could try her if she doesn't call in a minute.
Okay.
Can we try that?
Sure.
Okay, we'll seek her out. In the meantime, I get to gloat about McKenna a little bit. I went to what was the name of the Shakespeare play? Remind me.
The Two Gentlemen of Verona.
Yes, right.
Mm-hmm.
You were just fantastic in that play.
Thank you.
And I said to Dennis, as a friend of mine, I said to him, "Who is that girl?" And you know. So anyway, yes. You have a glow. You have charisma, a presence, all these things, and you're not alone. I'm say there are a lot of talent there on stage, and you have a lot of great people. But I'm happy that you can join us today. Tell me a little bit, McKenna, about why do you do theater on Kauai?
I do theater because all growing up, I've been in a lot of pageants, and my mom kind of always put me on the theater and on the stage. So it's kind of second nature for me to be up there and to perform, I guess. And I heard about KPEC when I was a sophomore, and my sister did it as well, but I started a little late coming in. But I really enjoy acting. I think it's great. You get to meet a lot of great people and make a lot of friends. And it's just fun being able to be a part of a production with people that enjoy acting and singing and dancing as much as you do. And it's a really great experience, and I like it a lot.
Oh, that's great. Well, I got to tell you, I did a lot of theater growing up, this from the time I was, I don't know, 6 or 8 or 9 or whatever, and all through my high school years. That's what kept me sane in high school through kind of a challenging period in our American history, that was being in theater, and I loved that. It was a sanctuary for me to be in the theater, and I made a lot of great relationships out of that. So I have a lot of appreciation for that, and I'm hoping that that's, and I'm hearing that that's something that's important to you.
And guess what? We have Esther on the air.
Esther, are you on the air with us?
I sure am.
Esther. Okay, now I don't know. Now McKenna, I don't know how you feel about Esther, because she makes you run around in that big old costume that she made for you. Now in Beauty and the Beast, this classic Disney tale is it was so well mounted, as we say in theater. It was really beautifully done. Again, I saw it last weekend, and McKenna, you play the teapot.
Yes.
Okay. And you have to run around the whole show in this big teapot all around you.
Yes, I do. I use intermission to take it off, but for the most part, I'm just running through the hall like sideways to get through.
It's awesome. And your theater, your story son Chip. Everybody remembers Chip, the little cup, the teacup.
Yes.
Yeah. So now the people that built this, I assumed, I'm sitting in the audience, I'm thinking, oh, they had to have rented these things out of L.A. and flown them in, and all these costumes and these masks and everything. But no.
Not with Esther behind the scenes.
Esther, you are amazing. Tell us about what you have built.
Sorry, say again.
Yeah, tell me what you were called upon to build for this show, Beauty and the Beast.
When I talked to Dennis McGraw, he asked me if I was willing to do all the enchanted objects for the show, which went the spots, Chip, wardrobe, the duster, of course, Lumiere and Cogsworth. And we had been thinking about the rose, and he wanted the rose to be something that the audience could be involved in. So I told him I could pull it off and figure out a way to do that.
Now, wait a minute. We got to slow this down a little bit. Okay, the rose is like 10 feet tall in a glass case.
No, not quite that tall.
I'm juicing it a little bit, you know? Okay, so it's 8'3", okay? All right, so Cogswell, he's the one that's in the clock, right?
Yes.
It's this grandfather clock that this actor is wearing. You just see his face in the middle, and it's got a pendulum on it. And this is the detail is absolutely fantastic. And
then that's normally what kills me.
Oh my gosh! Well, I'm glad you lived through that one to tell the tale with us here on Out of the Box. And then we have what's the name of Luminaire? It's a candelabra, right?
Yeah, he's the candle of
us. It's fantastic. Of these lighted, what would you call those, Rich? I mean, you know, flames above the
flames, yeah.
I was thinking of a chandelier.
Sounds like. And then you have this, it's funny, I was talking to you off air yesterday, and you were kept saying, yeah, and I did the wardrobe. And I work in the movie business, so I'm thinking wardrobe. Oh, you did the costume. And it took me a while to understand. No, the wardrobe means the whole chest of drawers. This whole, what's another word for that? Anyway, you did this fantastic whole huge piece that this other woman has to wear. Tell us a little about that piece. It's complicated.
Yeah. Carrie is wearing the wardrobe, and she is Madame Grand Boucher, which really in French, in English, it means Mrs. Big Mouth. And basically, I guess I named her that because she's an opera singer.
Ah.
And so, but she turns into this cupboard or wardrobe, whatever you...
Armoire. That's the word I was lurking for. Armoire. Right.
And so she turns into that. And it was a lot of engineering that one. I did it last because all through working on all the other costumes, I was just racking my brain trying to figure out how I could put a person into a wardrobe, have the closet, the drawers open and close, and the doors open and close, and her still being able to fit in there and move.
How
I was lucky, though. Carrie was, she's very thin. That makes it a lot easier.
I guess so. When you go, when you're like, and you're measuring for a costume, and you have to take their measurements, and you must have figured out how much space she needed to be in there. So, I mean, so it's, is it all on you to have to come up with these designs? I mean, not only designing it, but engineering it so you say people can move in it, so it won't fall apart, all that stuff. Is that on you?
Yep.
That is fantastic. It's really, you are very, very talented. And as I mentioned before, and I understand you did the dragon in Shrek. Now, I missed that show. I'm really grateful. I was off island. But that sounds just like it was amazing. If any of the listeners out there saw Shrek, tell us about the dragon that you created.
Oh, that dragon, and truly, nearby killed me. I only had 7 weeks to pull it off.
Okay.
And, it was a lot of PVC tubes bending with a hot gun and hot air gun. And
wow.
But anyway, we're talking about Beauty and the Beast, so let's not get sidetracked.
No, but we are. That sounded like a major piece.
There have been many shows
that
Esther has dressed.
I see. Okay, Rich is an insider here. So
there have been many shows that Esther has dressed, and she's amazing.
That's great.
And they're beautiful, the costumes. And absolutely.
I'm just thinking that dragon would go great at Burning Man. I mean, I think we could. But anyway, that's a whole other discussion. So, let's talk about the play. So how long is the play? McKenna, how long is the play on? How many more nights?
This is the last weekend for the play, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. And Friday, Saturday, it's at 7. And Sunday it's at 3.
At 3. And I know that Dennis, and I want to give a shout out to Dennis McGraw, who helped me produce this segment and pulled you guys together and hooked you up with me to be on Out of the Box today. I want to thank him for that. And also Dennis was saying that at Sunday's show they hope to have these costume set pieces out in the lobby, like the actors will come out into the lobby, but on that day, if you come to that last show, they'll have these pieces out where you can look at them close up.
Yeah, that'd be good. I know I've already been offered for Cogsworth, the Grand Clock. I think his parents want to purchase it.
Wow, that's great.
And I'm hoping to sell all the other objects, maybe to other schools or theaters or something. So I'm going to be posting it on probably eBay or maybe even Craigslist.
Yeah.
If all the schools are interested, especially the roses. It was a lot of work and involving all those electromagnets and stuff. So it would be great if we didn't have to toss it and somebody else would want to be willing to use it for one of their shows.
Yeah, it would be fantastic. And you know, the play is so great, and the energy in the show. And McKenna, you just shine. You come on the stage. You have this great energy, this great presence and smile, and you just shine all the way through it. It's so worth seeing. So let's give the times again for that.
Friday, Saturday is at 7 p.m. and Sunday is at 3
p.m. And Esther, when you aren't building costumes, what are you doing? I mean, do you are you like a plumber or something, or are you a carpenter? Or
I actually like sewing and making costumes. Right now, I'm making a few costumes for Brenda Beeler, who does the. I forgot what her company's called. You know, Goofy, Minnie Mouse, Mickey Mouse.
It sounds like Disney to me, but yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So playing characters. So I'm making some costumes for that. But I do a lot of running around for a friend of mine in Kilauea, Meta Engineering, and just doing paperwork, lots of paperwork for plans that need to be submitted to engineering and planning and building and all that stuff.
Well, this is a creative outlet for you, and your skill is fantastic. I know I am off island a lot. I know Rich is here. He's seen a lot of your work, and he's just beaming and thumbs up on what your skills are. And we're all really pleased to have you here to do this.
The kids actually are amazing in this show because
nice.
I built all these difficult costumes, and I have not heard any kid tell me, "Oh, it's too hard to move. I can't do it." They were all very, very trooper.
Wow,
Dennis. I can do this, and
It's such a happy environment, and the kids just love performing.
Wow.
And I've helped Dennis in plays in the past.
Yes.
And I, you know, 15 years, I remember his KPAC students now have kids. Aaron Gaines and Jared Gaines.
Nice.
You know,
nice.
And all every show was just so very special.
When Arnold was still doing it, right?
No, actually, I came when Dennis just started.
Oh, okay.
Just started. I have a question for you, McKenna. You said Sunday 3 p.m., and on the website it says Sunday 4 p.m.
I was thinking, wondering about that, too, because Mr. McGraw told us 3, but I thought, gosh, it's normally 4.
Right. So,
truly, I am confused about that, too. I don't have any tickets handy, or do I?
Well, I'll tell you what, we're going to try to get that information. We'll call Dennis before the end of the show, and we will get that. We'll spin that information back out during the course of Out of the Box today. Anything you all want to leave us with for your little way to juice a great show and an opportunity for people to come see live theater of young people on Kauai who are dancing and singing and acting their hearts out? What would you like to leave us with?
Go ahead, McKenna. Okay. Well, I think it's just wonderful to be able to support, you know, Kauai's children and high schoolers that are, you know, involved with the performing arts. And it's just a great opportunity to see a wonderful play put on by great people. A lot of time and effort went into this. You know, we've been practicing since January to get this up and running.
Wow.
So, you know, it's been fun for us, and we hope that we can put on a great performance. Bring your kids. It's really great, and we already performed for kids on Wednesdays, the two past Wednesdays, and they just love it, and they can't stop talking about it. So I really hope that we can get the house packed every night for this last night, and it's just going to be awesome.
That's great. Esther, do you have anything else for us?
I would say if you need a break from the world for a while and be enchanted and magicized, or however you want to say it, just go sit down, watch a show, and you'll be, like, transported to a different world. It's awesome.
Really nice. And great people there. Just, you know, the intermission is always fully, you know, charged with a lot of great conversation and fun and seeing pictures. And after the play, you get to meet some of the actors, the kids, and, you know, give them the
social gathering after the play.
Yeah,
I tell
it's really, really, really fantastic. Thank you again for your hard work on Beauty and the Beast this last weekend down at the Kauai War Memorial Convention Hall here in Lihue. And for more information, we'll get back to you on the time for Sunday. We'd see the 3 or 4 o'clock, 7 o'clock, though definitely Friday and Saturday. McKenna and Esther, congratulations on great work, and thank you again for participating on Out of the Box.
You're welcome. Thank you.
All right. Bye bye now.
Bye.
All right. I'm Rick C, and I'm sitting in with my buddy. Cousin Rich here, he's engineering, and we actually have a few minutes of open time. We planned it this way.
And we have a pledge drive coming up as well.
Yes.
And I'm going to play this announcement from Tracy.
And if you have any calls.
KKCR's Wave Rider program will make a huge splash during our upcoming spring membership drive. For a donation of $150, a brief message about your business will surf the airwaves during every two-hour program throughout our 11-day fundraiser. The spring membership drive begins Monday, May 11th and ends Thursday, May 21st. Early sign-up guarantees you the most airtime for your message. WaveRider forms are available on kkcr.org or call 826-7774 for more information. Reserve your spot in the lineup today.
There we are. Okay. Sorry, just trying to answer the phones here. Someone wants to go on the air with some information. He said he spoke to you.
Give me a microphone.
Okay, there you go. Sorry.
Perfect. Not a problem. Not a problem. This is real people radio, and I like that fact. You know, look, we are not all smooth and perfect here. This is Community Perfect Radio, and it could be you, just another fool like me sitting behind the microphone. Hi, you are on the air. Who's this?
This is Raymond Catania. I'm just calling in to... I'll share some information with your listeners.
Great, Raymond. We got about 5 minutes for you. So what is it? What's on your mind today?
I am looking at an actual Beauty and the Beast ticket, since I have one, and I'm really excited about going. And it does say Sunday 3.
I'm on the same time as someone.
Okay, there we go. All right, we just thank you, caller, for letting us know that the ticket says Sunday at 3, and we're going to confirm that with the director. Just got a little mixed up there, but now, Raymond, we're back to you, and your issue
du
jour,
sir. I understand. That's okay. I just wanted to mention to your listeners that there's a fight that's going across the United States, and it's just beginning to develop here in Hawaii, the fight for $15 an hour, especially for major corporations like Walmart. And what has happened is that the Fight for 15 has pressured companies like Walmart to increase their wages for new hires. Unfortunately, it's only going to be affecting about 6,000 workers who are getting minimum wages right now. Let me see. Their entry wages are going to go up to $9 this year and $10 next year. But besides that, what Walmart had done is that they're at five of their stores across the continent, one in particular, Pico Rivera, they closed it, and they said for plumbing reasons.
Well, wait a minute, Raymond, we got a whole. There's a whole lot in what you've said already. I want to jump on a couple things. One is the recent increase that Walmart has said they're offering to raise wages.
Yes.
I personally, looking at the political landscape, I think they're doing that to be proactive because they knew it was going to be a major issue in the 2016 campaign, and if not now. And so I think they were trying to get ahead of the curve on that. So, but it's only going to go up by whatever, up to $9, I think you said.
$9 this year and $10 next year. But the thing is that there's a national campaign for at least $15 an hour, and for Walmart to get his part-time workers full-time work.
Now,
you know, and benefits.
That's a point that I've heard recently too. Is that there is a they instead of hiring. Moving their part-time workers up to full-time, they are looking now to hire more part-time people, and that is because part-time they don't have to pay benefits. Is that right?
That's exactly it.
Yeah.
So what happened is that I wrote a letter to the editor, and it came out on the 28th, and it talked about these issues. But they, you know how it is with the newspapers. They take out lines sometimes to make everything fit, you know, and because that's their editorial prerogative. But they took that line out about Walmart hiring part-time workers, you know, which is a big sticking point because the veteran workers would like to get more hours, a lot of them, so they can work full-time. And then they want their wages to come up considerably since Walmart makes $16 billion a year in profits. You know, it's the richest corporation in the world. And they want to get more justice. And when they speak up, they get fired.
Right.
Or they get laid off. And the workers here on Kauai, because I've talked to a whole number of them, are afraid to speak up. Unless they get fired, unless they're fired already or they've quit, then they're willing to say something because nothing else can happen to them. But those that are on the job are really afraid to speak up, and I understand why. I don't want to see them lose their jobs either.
All right. So Ray, we got to wrap it up here in just a minute, so think about what are your other salient point is. But I want to ask, make sure I'm hearing you correctly. You're saying that you have spoken to local people, workers for Walmart, on Kauai, and that you're talking about problems, harassments, low wages, whatever. Because you know we can look at a lot of these issues we end up talking about as a global or national issue,
but
you're bringing it home and saying that. Okay, great. Let's wrap it up with one more. What else do you have for us, real quickly?
Well, basically, that's what I wanted to bring that out.
Okay.
You know, the Fight for 15, you know, is a national issue. We'll be doing it here on Kauai and throughout Hawaii. And the thing is that the conditions for retail workers, which are largely non-union, their conditions have to increase. They have their pay and the benefits have to get better because it's very difficult to survive, you know.
Right.
And we all know that. And income inequality is the major issue across the whole United States, including Hawaii, for most people.
All right, Raymond, thank you for calling us, and I'm sure you'll keep us abreast.
Thank you for giving me the chance, and I really enjoy your show, especially the beginning part where you had Allison Fraley. So I'm going to go back and listen as well. Thank you.
Very good. Appreciate your participating here on Out of the Box. We have another caller we're going to go to. At 5 o'clock, we have the Nepalese Friends of Hawaii coming on to talk about the earthquake in Hawaii. I'm Rick C., and you're listening to Out of the Box. Hi, you're on the air.
Hello.
Yes, hi.
You know, this concerns the Kilauea Ag Park, where they're going to grub and grade 75 acres from, you know, basically, you know, before, you know, by Seascape, you know, Crater Hill, the down the wild land that goes down to Kalee Quarry Road. There's 75 acres of land they're going to grab and grade for ag land, right? And I picked up this flyer that someone put out, and I thought it was really great, and I'm just going to read it to you really quick, and that'll be that. This little point, right, you know, near, you know, a half a mile from the lighthouse, it's the northernmost point of Polynesia. I'm reading this piece of paper, okay? It's the northernmost point of Polynesia, the westernmost point of European expansion, a wondrous creation of nature, thousands of songbirds, millions of bees, an epiphany of lushness. That's beautiful right there. Then it says, 180 years ago, there was a call on the east coast of America, farms, we need farms. The newspaper spoke of bottomland in the Appalachians where the savages lived, a.k.a. the Native American Indians. And then gone are the buffalo, the Indian, the prairie, the forest, pure water, fresh air. And then it says, 7 months ago, the local paper put out a story. Old dump site had become farms. They're talking about this ag land, a Kalee Quarry Road area. The following morning, in a most obvious spot, a large pile of roofing debris appeared. General trash, roofing nails, and washers and stuff. Like somebody planted it there. And he's familiar with this area more than anybody, this character who wrote this. And he goes, there's no trash on that land. There's one messy campsite that was cleaned up. There's three old cars in a corner down there off Rock Quarry Road that would take 2 hours to remove. And he makes a point that the news article, it's manipulative, it's deceptive, you know, like, well, it's just a dump, a trash dump. So let's turn it into ag land. And when really, you know, where are all those birds going to find homes for? You know, I mean, even though it's near the reserve for migrating seabirds, you know. And then he says, you know, where's the best place for farming?
Caller. Okay, I'm gonna jump
and
in.
That's about that. That's about all I need to say.
Oh, well, I'm gonna ask you one question. I'm gonna give you 30 seconds to answer this.
Okay.
What action should people take if they want to oppose the development that you're talking about?
Well, I think it's already a done deal, isn't it?
You tell me. So what,
I think that's what it
well,
is.
That's what I
think, that there is nothing that anybody can do. It's just a statement that I think is poetic, is that, yeah, it would be nice. It's better than having, like, a nuclear missile site. You know, ag land, it sounds good. It's a nice idea. There could be a lot worse things put there. But you also, he makes a good
Danny, point. Danny, we have to get this one call in before we top of the hour.
He makes a good point. It's the northernmost point of Polynesia.
Great.
It's the westernmost point of Europe. It's an expansion, and now it's not going to be wild anymore.
All right, well, thanks, and let us know ahead of time next time if you can. Thank you, aloha.
Bye-bye.
All right, one last call. Got about a minute for you. Who's this?
Jonathan J.
Hey, aloha. Fantastic show, as always. I don't know how you do it.
Thank you, Jonathan. Appreciate it. You'll be here in the hot seat next week. What's on your mind today?
Well, I wanted to let people know about the PMAC, which is the Puna Moku Ahupua'a Councils, and to let you know that we're having a meeting coming up on May 17th, and it's going to be fantastic, and it's going to be at the Kapa'a Library. It's the second Sunday of the month. Doors open at 4:30, and we have delicious food. Then the meeting starts promptly at 5, and we're all out by 7 p.m. so everybody can get home to their ohana and have second dinner.
What's on the agenda for the meeting?
Oh, boy, we got so much on the agenda, I don't even think I could tell you everything.
Well, okay, well, what's the focus? What's the purpose? Why should people show up?
Well, you know, that's a great question. What we are doing is we are working to restore the traditional, customary, and generationally proven methodologies of the Hawaiian people for natural resource management. And we're doing it in our own neighborhoods, one ahupua'a at a time, across this island and across the entire archipelago.
Okay, so, and just to make the point, your pidgin isn't very good, so I'm assuming you're not from here, so that, and I extrapolate from that
people, Hawaiian people, and people who are non-indigenous to the state can participate.
Yeah, it's open to anybody who recognizes their responsibility to care for the land that we live upon that sustains us.
Nice. Give us the date again and the place.
It's May 17th. It's Sunday, May 17th, in the Kapa'a Library in beautiful downtown Kapa'a.
Great.
And it doors open at 4:30 for pupus, and the meeting starts at 5. And anybody who recognizes their responsibility to Malama Aina, to care for the land, is welcome to join us. We're so excited to meet you and work with you.
Thank you so much, Jonathan Jay, for calling in here on Out of the Box.
Thank you so much for providing this amazing community service.
We'll talk to you soon. Aloha.
Aloha.
Okay. I am Rick C., R-I-C-S-E-A-M-O-U-S-E, and my engineer is Cousin Rich, and he is personing the phones, and all the buttons and dials and everything. The guy is amazing.
And I have to say that it is indeed top of the hour, and you're listening to Out of the Box at KKCR Hanalei, KAQA Kilauea, K224CQ Moloa'a, and K284AL Haleiwa. And this show, Out of the Box, is made possible by listeners like you in partnership with these underwriters.
Neil Norman and the Hawaii Life Brokerage Ohana proudly supports GMO-free Kauai, agricultural biodiversity, and sustainable farming practices, such as community gardens, food forests, seed saving, and beekeeping. Malama Aina.
Announcing the return of the Tahiti Nui's Hanalei Luau, featuring 50 years of songs and dances as a tribute to their mama, Auntie Louise. Tahiti Nui, providing live Hawaiian music on Kauai since 1963. This family-style luau is every Wednesday, 5 to 7:30. More information at 826-6277 or online at thenui.com.
Kaz's Welding, island-wide mobile welding service. Home and commercial fabrication, auto and truck repairs, whatever needs welding. You can call Kaz at 346-9805 for more information or to hire his mobile welding services. Kaz's Welding proudly supports KKCR.
Okay, and mahalo for supporting Kauai Community Radio, and I thank you even before the pledge drive for always contributing and becoming a member here at this most wonderful radio station. And this is Out of the Box with Rick C., and I'm Cousin Rich. And what's up, bro?
Hey, we got the phones are ringing. It's good to look across the console at you, my friend. And we're going to be talking in just a minute to a man who I am so happy to meet. Kavi Nepane of the Society of Nepalese in Hawaii is on the line. I think we're going to go to him right now. Do we have Kavi on the phone?
We most certainly do.
Great. Let's put him on the air. Kavi, yeah. Welcome to Out of the Box and Kauai Community Radio.
Thank you.
I'm so glad to hear you. So let's see. We want to make sure we got good audio from you. And so, Kavi, tell me a little bit about now. Do you have an official position? Are you a president or anything like that of the Society of Nepalese in Hawaii?
So I am an advisor. There is an advisory council. So I am one of the members of this advisory council of the Society of Nepalese in Hawaii.
Now, I understand there's about 200 people, I believe, 200 Nepalese in Hawaii. And, of course, the reason we're talking to, which we're going to get into in just a minute, is the very tragic earthquake that has taken place about a week ago in Kathmandu. Just so the listeners know, I'm put this out there. I love your country, and I love your people. I traveled in Asia for 3 years at one point with a backpack, and I had an apartment in Kathmandu, and I just have a real affinity, and my heart aches for the challenges that your wonderful people are facing. Before we get into that, I do want to ask, what is the Society of Nepalese in Hawaii? You're a 501c3, an illegal nonprofit organization. What is the purpose of your organization, Kavi?
We started this organization in 2007. About 10 or 15 of us were initially present, and we realized that many of us at that time were professionals, students, faculty associated with University of Hawaii at Manoa. Of course, we interact with friends here, just like you. There are many people who love the country, who love the people, and we are the recipient of that love. And we felt like, we need to do something. We need to have an organization. Together we can do something. That's how we started that organization. Mainly, it is a cultural exchange, we celebrate some of our local festivals, Nepali festivals. We just have a unified, culture, education, things of that nature. Broadly, it's mainly educational and cultural organizations.
And how did you, Kabi, how did you end up in Hawaii? What brought you here?
University of Hawaii and East West Center. I was an East West Center alumni. I came in Hawaii back in 1991.
Wow, okay,
nice. With an East West Center scholarship. And, I got my master's. I got my PhD from University of Hawaii at Manoa. And I stayed.
That's awesome. What is it? I remember Dai. Dai is for older brother, right?
Dai is older brother.
Bai is it Bai is younger brother?
Bai is younger brother.
I'm assuming you are Bai, but
I guess so. I'm 55 years old, so you take it from there.
Okay, all right. Well, all right, Dai. Then we say namaste, namaskar. I am so pleased to have you. Let's talk about what's really important, and my heart and a lot of people's hearts go out to you and your people in the aftermath of this earthquake. Just give us a brief summary of what is the result. What is, how many people? I'm hearing it's up to 4,000 of your people have been killed.
No, recently they have revised the number. It is close to 6,000 people.
Oh my God.
They know they have tabulated disease, dead.
Wow.
About 10,000 plus people are injured. This is, mind you, this is only in Kathmandu Valley or some of the major cities in outer districts, district headquarters.
Right.
A lot of villages in Gorkha and, near the epicenter of this earthquake are so inaccessible, and maps, helicopter pictures, etc. We see tragic cases where nearly all the villages have been wiped out, and they are so inaccessible. The roads are, dirt roads or non-existent roads, so people have to walk for days and days uphill to get to those places. And monsoon is just beginning, so smaller helicopters, they cannot have a landing site. They need to rely on weather. They cannot ferry many people. So it's just a tragedy of immense proportion. So, they are still reeling through that one.
Well, what about, I know that you lost a, I used to have an apartment off of Durbar Square, and I saw a picture, and it looks like two of the three temples there. The old buildings have fallen down?
Yeah, the old buildings have fallen down. Yeah, the Basantapur area where you might have been there, Kathmandu, the name comes from one building which they say was made from a single tree. In Sanskrit it is called Kathmandap, meaning a wooden house, which was built from a single tree, and Kathmandu City is named after that building, which is completely gone, demolished.
Wow.
Likewise, the tall Dorara Tower is completely down. And, many historical temples in Bhaktapur, in Patan, in Kathmandu are all, they've all damaged completely. They have collapsed completely. Yeah.
What about Swayambhuna?
Swayambhunath, I saw on the back, these days they have these drones, and I saw in Facebook one of the images where, they show, they fly over Swayambhunath temple, and, they have the main temple from the outside, it looks okay, but, the small side temple on the back has collapsed, so I'm sure there is some structural damages, but the building itself you know, those eyes are still gazing you. They're still watching you. Whether you're being nice or not, you know. So Swayambhu still standing.
That's such an important place. I remember being there many times, and the crazy monkeys there and all the things, you know.
Yeah, the crazy monkeys.
That are there. And I'm looking at photographs on my computer, and This is very, very dramatic. The Kathmandu Valley is large, and there's Bhaktapur is there, he said. But it wasn't even the epicenter.
Yeah, it was not the epicenter. The epicenter is, you know, between Pokhara and Kathmandu, a district called Gorkha.
Right, right.
And that is where a lot of damage has occurred. Of course, death-wise, you know, people and property damage-wise, it is Kathmandu because that's where most people affected live, and it is very crowded.
Well, you know what? You know, another thing that really concerns me, Kabi, is, of course, you know, we know, and most people know, Nepal is a very, very poor country in the largest scheme of the world, and has a very small economy, and a big part of your economy is tourism and people who go there, like myself, and go there for seeing the Himalayas and enjoying the beautiful architecture and the people and the hospitality and the rhododendron forests and all these fantastic things that are there. But I'm concerned now that the tourists are going to stay away. And this is at the time when Nepal needs support. It needs people and finances to rebuild.
Yeah, it sure does. And I think at this time, you know, the way I look at it is currently there are people still buried, so this is really a recovery type of effort right now, rescue type of effort.
Yes.
But this stage is going to pass, and a month or two from now, this is a massive, you know, there is a massive, massive task for rebuilding. And I think, you know, we have received tremendous outpouring of goodwill, just like you said. You know, I mean, my skin, I get goosebumps when people like you, or, you know, who say how much you love, you know, it's like inside me, my heart is also aching. You know, we see some of those structures that we thought were so strong, you know, you identify with those structures. And now when they are gone, you feel like, you know, something is missing. And yes. When you are in that grieving mood and a friend says, hey, you know, I'm really sorry, this is what I'm with you. Just like you said, you know, you feel, you know, you really feel touched.
Right.
And I think that kind of goodwill needs to sustain and, you know, in the long run, I think we have to work with our friends to ensure that, you know, this is not a short-term thing.
Absolutely.
You know, a sustained goodwill is needed for a long haul. It may be, you know, decades. You know, it's just not going to happen.
Let me make this invitation right now, Kabi. We are a community radio station, and therefore we are in touch with people who have a lot of joy about community and the world community, and many people on this island and supporters and members of this radio station have been to your country and have been impressed by the beauty of the people and the environment. And I want to invite you to call into this program or to any of our programs. You can find our program schedule on the website, kkcr.org, and call into Out of the Box or any of the other public affairs shows, and, you know, once a month, every couple months, and tell us how it's going. I really want to keep the information going out there, because, you know, this is like what happens, like when someone dies, everyone rushes to the widow and sends them all the packages or the food or whatever, and then 2 weeks later they're nowhere to be found.
They're gone.
You know?
They're gone.
And this is maybe a great lesson for us as humanity, is to remember that healing, you know, goes on and takes a long time.
Yeah, it does. And I just cannot appreciate, you know, the kind of foresight you are showing, Rick. That is a kind of wisdom, that is a kind of understanding, and that is a kind of commitment I think we all need. this is a small world now. You know, even in Kauai, I do know there is one Nepali family.
Nice.
You know, so he teaches at Kauai Community College. So, you know, we are a fabric. We yes. are a fabric of this, you know, small space we call our planet Earth.
Yes, yes. Yes.
And, you know, I mean, it is getting better to me, you know, in many ways it is getting better, you know, because of the goodwill of people, of communities like you or, you know, like many people here. So I think we need to continue. And this kind of dialogue, frequent dialogues, will yes. only help inform.
Yeah, absolutely.
Also, you know, maintain that connection. You know, it's like, you know, I'm from Nepal, so if I do not talk to my brothers or my sisters for a long time, you know, their children, et cetera, they may know, oh, you know, there was some uncle somewhere, but, you know, it's just like fable. You know, it's not personal. It's
right.
not close up. So
right.
if we keep at it, if we connect to each other, then, you know, it becomes live and it becomes continuous, yeah?
Yeah, and you know, Kavya, I want to get next to, there's a lot of this time that I want to talk with you, and the next segment of our conversation I want to devote to talking about fundraising and talking about what people can do if they can afford. I personally will make a sizable donation to this effort. But first, I want to ask you if you can answer this question briefly. Nepal has a rather unique religious system. Is it not? Is mm-hmm. it kind of, it's Hindu and Buddhist kind of mixed together? And if so, and can you tell me what does a tragedy like this mean to Nepalese in the context of their spiritual and religious beliefs?
Well, you know, in many ways, the Hindus and the Buddhists, they are in a larger scheme of things, you know, if you will, the same kind of same group or same family of religion. Just like, you know, other religions like, you know, Christianity or Judaism or Islam, you know, if they fall in one type of branch, you know, this is a separate type of branch. So there are a lot of similarities. Now, within Nepal, historically, you know, it's a predominantly Hindu country. But Hindus consider Buddha as one of the, you know, 10 incarnations of the god Vishnu. So Buddhists and Hindus pretty much go to each other's religious ceremonies. Many of the practices look similar. So, and there is a, you know, I mean, one does not know whether somebody is a Hindu or Buddhist, but just by watching them go to a temple or go to a, you know, stupa,
yes.
you cannot tell.
Yes.
You need to look at their birth certificates or, you know, their official documents, what they write as their religion, you know. So it's very hard to find out unless you ask them. It is almost indistinguishable.
And is there, can you find faith? Can you find hope in your religion with regard to this kind of tragedy? Can people be supported in that?
Yeah, you know, I personally feel, you know, in times of distress, people take comfort in whatever thing that they believe in. So people do go to temples, they do go to, you know, the stupas or, you know, churches or mosques to find some comfort. But deep inside, I think it is to find, you know, in a tragedy like this, which is nature's fury, how can you rationalize it? How can you comprehend it? How can it be just? You know, so I think that's why people go and take some sort of comfort from supernatural being. I personally do not subscribe to that type of, you know, I do not derive that kind of solace myself, but I do go to temples and I do have friends. You know, it all varies, I think. It is all individual.
Well, you know, I gotta say, I traveled through 13 countries in 3
mm-hmm.
years with a backpack, and I just found that the Nepalese people had a certain joy.
Yeah.
And so whatever you guys are doing, keep doing it, Kavi. I guess that's what it comes down to. So let's talk about people who want to get involved. Now, your organization, the Society of Nepalese in Hawaii, which I love the acronym. It's SNEHA, which you said is the Sneha.
Sneha,
which also equates in English to the word love.
Yeah,
that's fantastic.
It is an active word. You know, Sneha is love, so it's like you. It's almost like aloha, you know, Sneha. I think even rhyme in aloha and Sneha.
Nice.
So it's basically equivalent to aloha, Sneha, love.
So now I was thinking, okay. Because I'm going to make a large donation. I'm thinking I'm just one person. There may be other people out there like me who are thinking the same thing. But I want to make sure my money is spent really well. I don't want it to pay for jet flights and office space and all these different things. Now, to some degree, you need some of those things to keep an organization running. But I want to depend on your organization to best spend the money so it's going to benefit the people. How can we do that? And tell me what your organization is doing to fundraise for the earthquake victims.
Yeah, I agree with you 100%. I am internally, you know, so I'm happy, I'm delighted. But let me tell you what we are doing. And then, you know, there are ways in which I think we need to work together to ensure that what you are just saying really happens on the ground. So currently, what Sneha is doing is, you know, we have a website called www.esneha.org, E-S-N-E-H-A, sneha.org. If you go to that website, on the front homepage, you know, there are ways you can donate by PayPal, you can write a check, and the address is there, who to write the check. We have a bank account through Bank of Hawaii. People can make a contribution. Already we have received, as of this morning, about $8,000 of donations. Now we have that money, and we have done a lot of work among our friends here, the membership of SNEHA, as to how best we can deliver this fund for relief purposes. And based on the need, we have identified two organizations here. One is called America Nepal Medical Foundation. These people have doctors here as well as in Nepal, and they have their network linked, and they can really make a difference, medical help quickly. So we are talking with them to ensure that some of the money goes to that organization. Second one, we are also talking with Real Medicine Foundation, and this is also a charity, and we have done some research, and it looks they have very low overhead costs, and much of the money that we raise, and they are going to match some of the money that we send. So, you know, it just increases the amount of money that goes to the ground, to the needy. So those are the two things, and we also have a member currently. It just so happens that one of SNEHA's executive member happened to be in Kathmandu visiting her family in Kathmandu. So while she's there, tomorrow she was planning to go to one of those outlying areas, affected areas, and distribute some help to the people. So these are the three things that we are currently doing, and we are also leaving open the possibility of these smaller, very efficient local resources and organizations that have low overhead can have maximum impact with minimum overhead charges. But I realize personally, Rick, that there are people who want to make some kind of buck during this tragedy. You know, there are people like that. So we are also trying not to fall prey from many of these organizations that, you know, that are interested. We just do not know. So we might need help from people to really, you know, we are open to suggestions, basically, and we are not putting all our money in one basket. So, you know, we do not have a large amount of money. We do want to send the money fast. but carefully, and through our own resources, our own network, person-to-person connections, etc. We feel that, you know, we know the people, and we know, you know, the limitations, and to the best of our ability, we are trying to be good stewards and of the hard-earned dollars, because, you know, it really gives a bitter taste if you donate some money and some, you know, undeserving person benefits from that one, you know. I mean, it is bad for everybody, and we're trying our best to avoid that pitfall.
Are there any of the large organizations that you know to be more economical or, you know, efficient in spending their money?
Well, the only one that I know through talk from friends, there is another Indian organization here in Honolulu called Lotus. And they are doing a separate fundraiser from their own organization, and their president, she told me that they are sending money through an organization called IDRC. Apparently, that organization matches dollar for dollar whatever contribution Lotus is making.
Nice.
And I think, you know, we have not done a lot of a large volume transfer so far. This is going to be our first one. We are relatively a smaller organization, so we are trying to learn ourselves. And yeah.
So, Kabi, I'm going to let the listeners know we got another few minutes left. I'm speaking to Kabi Nupane, and he is of the Society of Nepalese in Hawaii, which is a nonprofit organization. And we're talking about earthquake relief and some of the challenges that the wonderful people of Nepal and that that country will be facing in the coming years. We will give out contact information for the Society of Nepalese in Hawaii in just a couple minutes. So if you're interested in getting in touch with Kabi or someone at that organization, please get a pen and paper or get your iPhone or whatever you need standing by, and we'll give that out in just a minute. Kabi, I understand you're doing you're on Oahu, and you're doing a fundraiser, a meal or something out in Kaimuki in the next coming days. Is that right?
Yeah, so we have several activities going on. Today at 7 o'clock in Kennedy Theater, U.S. Manoa campus, we have a candlelight vigil. People can donate here. And this afternoon, 12 o'clock to noon at Kapiolani Community College, there was an international concert. All proceeds of that concert will go towards, you know, relief effort. So those are the two activities today. On this Sunday, we have a fundraiser. This is a big one, which is at Himalayan Kitchen in Kaimuki, where we are requesting people to go and, you know, donate what you can.
Yes, I see that on your website. I'm on your website now, esneha.org, and I'm seeing that is May 3rd. And that's 12:30 p.m. until 8 p.m. And that will be that's great. And now also I want to put out the call to people who are listening on the island of Kauai. Maybe someone on Kauai wants to host a fundraiser. Someone wants to cook a meal. Someone wants to do something for the people. I know there's a lot of love for your people here on this island. And if someone wants to do that and they want to have support, let's get into some of that contact information that's important. Kabi, who would they get a hold of if someone here on Kauai wants to do something for the people of Nepal?
So I think, you know, they can call me. I can coordinate. But the best person, local person in Kauai, there is a professor of agriculture, botany in Kauai Community College. His name is Sharad Maratta. Sharad Maratta. He and his fantastic wife are heavily involved in Sneha, and they are from the region which is, you know, most affected, you know, at the center of this earthquake.
Yes.
So I think they are the right people. They have all the aloha, and they will be, I'm sure they will be willing to cook or do whatever it takes to ensure to bring the community together. But it's just one family, you know, so.
Right.
You know, Sharad, his wife, and their daughter. I think their daughter is 11th or 12th grader now, so.
Nice.
Yeah.
All right. So what how do you spell his last name?
Marahata, M-A-R-A-H, like house, A-T-T-A, Marahata.
Marahata. Okay, very good. Yes. And the contact information, again, for the Society of Nepalese in Hawaii, get that out, the website, and also email and phone if you want to, whatever you want to share with people so they can get in touch to try to help out.
Oh, yes, definitely, yeah. So I think the main source is the website, eastneha.org. There's a lot of information about people, about SNEHA's bylaws, and we'll be updating that website regularly. We also have a Facebook, and people can go through Facebook or through that website and get in touch with any one of us.
Oh, Kabi, it's sweet and sour here. I mean, it's a mixed blessing that I get to meet you under these circumstances. I'm so pleased to make your acquaintance, and my heart grieves for your people, and I have much faith in the strength of your people and to come through, and I know that people will rally around for them. So, and I know you're grieving, and many people are. Help keep us in the loop here on Out of the Box and at KKCR. Call us on any of the public affairs shows, and we'd like to hear more about it. I will certainly make a contribution, and I will go to esneha.org and make my contribution.
Yeah. Thank you so much, Rick, and I cannot appreciate, like I said, in the time of grief, when a friend touches you and, you know, just consoles you, you know, you feel like crying, you know, your eyes water because, you know, it is a sad thing, but it is also a good thing in the sense that we got to meet each other.
Yes, thank
you. And, you know, this probably would never have happened. So, you know, in moments of crisis, it helps us get together. It helps us, you know, be one, be united. For our common bonds. So in that sense, I'm grateful. And I think everybody here will be grateful, you know, not just, you know, your station, of course, but in Honolulu, we really have received an outpouring of support. We didn't know that we had that many friends, you know, so we are all working in our own little holes, but it is really good to know, you know, as money is one thing, but friendship, long-term commitment is a different thing. So we would like to take this opportunity to grow our bonds.
Thank you.
Well, make long-term friendships. Thank you.
You represent your people very well. I hear your heart, as one of our famous late talk show hosts would have said. I hear your heart. Thank you very much. Good luck to you, and we will be in touch, and lots of love and support for you and the people in Nepal. And thank you for being here today on Out of the Box.
Aloha. Thank you. Namaste.
Aloha. Namaskar.
Yeah.
All right, folks. We'll be back in just a moment. I've got Dave Stewart and Greg Holtzman here in the studio. We're going to be talking a little bit about the organization, about some of the challenges being faced out in the ocean here, just right in our backyard. I do want to give a salute out. I was on Maui for a couple of days, flew back in this afternoon, and I was with our friends, our neighbor station friends over at Mana'o Radio. I was on the air yesterday over there, and they're on Maui. It's their community, full power community radio station. I want to say hello to Bill and John and Tony and thank them very much for their hospitality and great radio station that they have over there. And it's nice to get more acquainted with you, and thank you for welcoming me. Rich, what do we have to do? And then we'll get with Dave and Greg.
Well, first I'm going to say in about 35 minutes, Dove with Evolve. He has a wonderful show.
Nice.
And right now we have a pledge drive coming up, and we need volunteers, so let's see.
Aloha. This is Dove Little, the volunteer coordinator of Kauai Community Radio. If you have an interest in helping out your community radio station, this is a great time to get involved. Call us at 826-7774 Monday through Friday between 10 a.m. and 4 p.m. and schedule a time to come in and fill out a volunteer application. Our spring fund drive is May 11th through May 21st. We need volunteer phone operators and pledge takers from 7 in the morning till 11 p.m. every day of the 10-day drive. It's a great time to meet the rest of the Ohana that make KKCR so diverse and fun. Plus, if you're interested, you could be quickly on your way to doing your own radio program, playing the music you love, or hosting a call-in talk show. Anything is possible when you become a volunteer of KKCR. Call me soon if you feel like being a part of your community radio station. We would love to meet you.
Thank you, Dove, for that great announcement calling volunteers. And we do need volunteers during the pledge drive. And it's great to hear you in about 35 minutes, Evolve with Dove. A great show here.
Nice.
On Kauai Community Radio.
Nice. And speaking of volunteers, I'm Rick C., and he's Cousin Rich. A couple of other volunteers down here at the radio station.
You don't get paid?
No, you know.
I do.
You do?
I always tell people,
come on my show and they say, well, how much are you going to pay me for being your guest? And I'll say, I'll tell you what, I'll give you half of everything I'm paid, you know? Then they go, oh, sweet. You know,
we are membership supported and volunteer run.
Exactly how it works.
And
we serve the local community, and we have a couple of local gentlemen in here today who want to speak about it. An issue that I can see the passion. I mean, wow. All right, now, we can't get so passionate that we can do the four-letter words. Now, one of the emails that I was sent, there was a few. What are these guys? So we're going to try and boil it down to what we need to know. And so my guests right now are Greg Holtzman and Dave Stewart, and they are the Kauai Ocean Users Organization. Welcome, gentlemen.
Aloha.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, well, thank you for showing up. So let's go first. Let's start here because we got a lot to cover in 25 minutes. What is the nut of the issue? There's a whale sanctuary expansion that's going on. Is that really what's the problem?
The whale sanctuary was a single species sanctuary that was set up with the purpose of protecting the whales. Now they've recently delisted the whales over here in Hawaii and the North Pacific area, and because of that, the mission of the sanctuary has kind of fallen on irrelevance, and so they've had to try and remake themselves. And about 4 years ago, we started the scoping process with the community that they wanted to find out what they could do to make themselves relevant again, and they came up with this ecosystem-based management.
And the federal government, right?
Yeah, NOAA.
And delisting, I wanted to just touch, delisting meaning that the whales in the area of Hawaii would no longer be on the endangered species list.
Well, they're still on, as far as I know, they're still on the endangered species list. They've just been delisted from the most critical I think it's endangered is
okay.
What it is at any rate, now they've gone into what they've called an ecosystem-based management, which they're going to manage everything within their sanctuary. That's the rocks, the fish, the coral, the monk seals, whatever's living in there. Okay. That's what they want to be able to manage.
Let's talk about how big the sanctuary is. What is it now, and what are they proposing?
Well, right now on Kauai, it is just from Haena to Kilauea. So right here in Hanalei, we do have a whale sanctuary. Of course, a whale sanctuary has never been a problem for anybody, really, because all we did was try and keep the whales happy and out of their way. And so it was fine. But now they've decided to get into this whole, managing all the resources in our state waters. And that's really when it gets a little bit tricky, because when the federal government comes into our state waters, the federal government has a different purpose and a different priority. And it's not all about the locals. It's a national interest-based sanctuary system. So, this is where we all of a sudden face a lot of big questions. And because of the fact that it's a community-based approach that they're trying to bring in, they're not trying to deal with the science as much as does the community want it. They're supposed to be going out and actually letting the community know what do they want, and also trying to get an idea of of how to deal with community issues when it comes to ocean resources.
Now you're listening to the voice of Greg Holtzman. My guest is also Dave Stewart. So what I want to ask is, you gentlemen, do you have interests in the ocean? And if so, what are they?
Yeah, aloha, everybody.
That's Dave.
Yeah, we definitely, you know, everybody that lives in this island has interest in the ocean.
Wow, good turnaround. Nice. I like
that. And what Greg just said, wow, that's complicated. You know, I'd like to make it a little bit more simple for all the community and all my friends in Ohana out there. Is the thing that I really want to keep is home rule. That's what I'm trying to relate to everybody is, once the federal government come in, we lose home rule.
Okay.
Without knowing all the details about the sanctuary and what they want to protect and what they want to do, doesn't that make sense? I mean, doesn't everybody out there want to keep home rule? Of course they do, because they want it for their children, your mo'opunas, sure, for everybody. And so I'm trying to keep it real simple here, but the fact that your question was, do we have interest in the ocean? We are both 35 years commercial fishermen.
Okay.
And I own a kayak business in Hanalei and a surf school down there. My wife is a native Hawaiian. She was born and raised in Hanalei. Her mom was born and raised in Hanalei. Her mom was born and raised in Hanalei and went to Haena school. And her mom, well, you get the point. Yeah,
yes, so got it.
We got plenty of generations here. And I am doing this for my kids' kids' kids.
Right.
I want to keep state waters in state hands.
Okay. So how much of your opposition to the way the federal government is trying to work the program, that's what I'm hearing you say, they're trying to work the sanctuary program into their better other interests for themselves, how much of that is motivated by your concern about your economy, about as fishermen and being able to and the tradition of fishing off of Kauai?
Well, it's so uncertain of really, they're not clear of all their points that they want to put apart. You know, they just turn out a 450 page booklet out. They say they have no plans on re-regulating or any regulations right now for any of our fishing rights. But in that 450-page booklet, every other page talks about fishing.
Mm.
That's fishy right there. Mm.
You're reading between the lines.
All pun intended,
yeah,
there.
Yeah, yeah, for
you
sure.
You know what I mean? But it's true. It's so sketchy, their plan, that we just, you know, hey, I love Hawaii. I love America. I just don't trust the federal government to come in and to rule our backyard.
Well, there's somebody I was talking to about this, and they were saying, you know, that they're concerned about the military maybe coming in and start using the oceans more for military purposes if the federal government has more control. So this issue can go off in a lot of different directions. And so let's go to something that's really important and basic, and we'll come back into some of this other discussion. There are public hearings coming up. Is that correct?
There are public hearings. They're coming up next week. That's why it was imperative to get on your show and let people know, because I bet you that a large percentage of the people that are listening to this show didn't even know this was happening, and yet this was supposed to be a community-driven plan in which the community was supposed to have a large input into it, and how many people knew that this thing was going on or even know what's in it. Right now, they're trying to expand all of the waters outside of Niihau, 3 miles, all state waters, and they're trying to expand down to Hanakapi'i and then all the way out to Pila, and basically a big fan all the way out into the ocean, 100-fathom line on the north shore of Kauai. They wanted the whole island, except they couldn't get it because we put out a 7,000-plus-page petition on Kauai and said we're against the expansion, and we're also but we did support their idea of education, which we like. We like the education leg of the sanctuary, but the getting into ecosystem based ocean management, we are not happy about. We do not trust them. They've deceived us and manipulated us from the very beginning. 4 years ago, we've gone to all the meetings, and here we are being rushed into a public hearing after 2 weeks having to try to digest a 450-page document and get it out to all the residents,
sure,
of this island.
Let's say we talk. It's May 4th, 5th, and 6th. There are the hearings.
Yes, and one is Kilauea on the 4th. And it's at the Kilauea
cafeteria.
What school?
It's at Kilauea School, elementary school cafeteria at 5:30, and then Tuesday is going to be at Waimea
middle school.
Middle school.
Cafeteria.
And then
5:30.
And then Wednesday also at 5:30 at Hanama'ulu.
King Kamali'i Elementary.
At their cafeteria also. And it's time for the people to come out and to say and give their mana'o and just let them know that we want to keep home rule. You know, we don't want to be overrun. And, you know, I just want to keep it real simple.
All right. So now, like, here's playing devil's advocate with you guys. I'm thinking, and the education and what I hear, information I get, is that the oceans in many places have been overfished, and that we're losing species, and that there you have to go deeper, you have to go further, you have whatnot like that. Now, I know you guys aren't the long net trawlers out there, the international consortiums that are doing a lot of that stuff, but locally, do you think there is a place for regulation on and maybe moratoriums on fishing in some places at some times to preserve or bring back a fish species?
You know, there's a lot of things that we can do to help conservation. I've been involved in a lot of the conservation of my fishery, which is bottom fishing, doing a lot of the tracking, essential bottom fish habitat research, essential habitat breeding for these different species to learn more about their life cycles and what they eat, and trying to bring back the fishery around the island of Niihau. The interesting thing is that Niihau, in this document, is being considered to be put into this sanctuary, not because it's overfished or the reefs have been degraded, but because they consider it the most pristine and highest biomass in the main Hawaiian Islands. That goes against everything. Here we are, 1,000 years of Hawaiian use, modern fishing out there, and yet, you know, this is the highest biomass and the most pristine area we have, and that is exactly the reason they want to take this away, and it goes against everything we're, as fishermen, we believe in. We believe in trying to keep our, and to make a sustainable fishery, and here we are trying to make a sustainable fishery, and they're trying to take it away from us for that exact same reason.
Do you think there are fishermen who do overfish? And that are not as sensitive as you're saying?
Absolutely. And, you know, the thing is that DLNR is not broken. They're broke. And what we need to do, we're getting one cent of every tax dollar is being used for DLNR. DLNR is a huge agency that does that takes care of all our natural resources, which are being here for the public trust. It's for everyone. And we're having a real problem with getting the funding for DLNR to do their job. And if NOAA wanted to help us, they could get the funding that's needed to help DLNR do the job that they really need to do. And that's where we really need to go with this.
You listen to the voice of Greg Holtzman. My other guest is Dave Stewart. I'm Rick C., and my engineer is Cousin Rich. We are on Out of the Box today here at Kauai Community Radio. I'm going to open up the phone lines if you want to make a quick, concise question for a concise answer, 826-7771. Both Dave and Greg are with the Kauai Ocean Users Organization, and we're talking about the whale sanctuary and federal government coming in, and, you know, what are they doing in our backyards? I don't know. It's there's questions about that. But if you want to get a question in or point in very quickly, 826-7771 here on Out of the Box. What is this about large landowners? And I'm hearing people saying, oh, this is a sanctuary for large landowners. What is that? How are people of means, maybe of really good means, how are they affected or do they benefit by these types of programs?
Well, of course, Niihau is owned by the Robinsons. They have military missions that are going on out there. They get over $1 million of money a year from the military for the radar installations and other exercises that they do out there. And they would like to keep it private, and they've always been that way. They've gone many different angles for the last 20 years. Last year they tried to go through the state senate, and now they're going with trying to do this through the federal government. So 3 miles all the way around Niihau. You've got a 100-fathom line all the way around Lanai, which is owned by Larry Ellison. You've got the West Hawaii Hotel Association. All their area out there is being considered. You've got the Pila Apua, that's pretty much owned by one family out there. And so you've got various different so-called communities, which have been pretty much owned by large landowners, and the communities that actually the working guys are really not necessarily being consulted the way they should be on this. Do you agree on that, Dave?
I'd like to share another thing about, you know, Noah's saying that this whole
NOAA, National Oceanic
Atmospheric Administration.
Yes, got it.
They are saying that this whole expansion is community driven. And so about a month and a half ago, I was fortunate to be at a meeting. The mayor was there, so that's why I went. And then luckily I was there, and Jean Souza, who is the coordinator for Kauai, was there. And she put on a great presentation for us about the sanctuary. And everybody's mouth just kind of dropped to the floor when she started saying about all these expansions of Pila'a down the Hanakapi'ai, and they want to add the Hanalei River also in there. And so my one question to her was, how did this come about? How did the expansion part come about? And she said, oh, it's all community-driven. I go, well, I live in this community, and I have about 400 family members from Haena down to Kilauea. None of us know about it. The president, Joel Guy, sitting next to me of the Hanalei Community Association, knows nothing about this. So tell me, how is it community-driven?
Mm.
And she could not answer that.
Wow.
And so the thing that, you know, and I'm not a name dropper, and I'm not going to drop names, but there is a certain individual that is on the board for the sanctuary that has a lot of personal interest in Hanalei, and we feel that it was more of an inside job, this expansion, especially the Hanalei River portion.
All right, so it's going to, let's look at not just you and your own personal interest, but let's look at the fishing industry in general. Yeah, it's very important. Long time. I mean, through.
Yeah, we're just people that feed people.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, so how's that going to be affected? What is your scenario that you think how it's going to be affected? And then we'll take a call.
Well, that's the thing. We're not sure how it's going to be affected. They said there's no new regulations proposed at this time.
Mm-hmm.
So we asked them, can you put that on paper? Can you promise us that we will never have our fishing rights taken away? They said, we can't do that. Then we asked them, well, you know, how come on every other page you talk about fishing and you're not proposing any new rules?
Mm-hmm.
So it just doesn't add up to us.
We have a caller, and we're going to bring them on the air. Again, concise question for concise answer. Hi, welcome to Out of the Box.
Yeah, I'm wondering who is in charge of this area at present, officially.
You're talking about the federal government?
The areas that they're talking on expanding, who's in charge of the areas now? Is it the U.S. government?
No, it's DLNR, Department of Land and Natural Resources. They're out 3,000 feet from the shoreline. That's their jurisdiction right now. Then after that, you're going to get into federal waters.
So has it been this way for years already?
Yeah, it's been this way for long as...
I got a quick correction. It's actually 3 miles out is all state waters in Hawaii. Beyond that, it's federal. I think there's a little bit different around as far as the whale sanctuary goes. From Haena to Kilauea, which is the present whale sanctuary, which is only a single species sanctuary based just for the whales themselves, that might be the 3,000 foot.
Caller, does that answer your question?
Yeah, well, the reason I'm asking is because they're having so many problems now. I wonder if it's a good idea to let these people continue to, quote, manage it. And another question is about liability. I mean, in a wildlife refuge, do they allow pumping of tons of pesticides and into the runoff into the sanctuary? And are they going to take on the liability to clean it up? You know, is that the plan? What's happening to cover Monsanto?
You know, I'm glad you brought that up, because there are some things, there are some problems that we're having in our coastal estuaries, our coastal ecosystem, and there's three real big ones. One is climate change, the other one is pollution, land runoff problems, and possibly the military R&D research and development, such as the sonar, maybe Doppler radar, we don't know. But anyways, all those things, the sanctuary has no jurisdiction over any of those. They only have, they only are trying to get jurisdiction so that they can really affect us, the small guys, the fishermen, the ocean users. That answer your question?
I wonder if that would be on their agenda, is to take control of that and put it to halt, seeing as it's going to be putting liability right on the taxpayers and right out of Monsanto's court, in my opinion.
Hey, caller, thank you for chiming in here on Out of the Box. Appreciate that. I want to touch on something else before we have to go, and we just have a couple of minutes left. There's a whole aspect to this that's wouldn't be present if you were on the coast of the continental United States as much, maybe if you were on rivers and whatnot there. But there's the traditional and Hawaiian, indigenous gathering rights. Yes, and thank you very much. Thank you. It's a traditional resource, and it's part of the ethnic and cultural diversity of the culture. How will this, might this, that be affected by these federal regulations?
Well, that's what we're worried about. Right now we have a really good movement in Haena. The community down there has spent about a decade of making rules and regulations, and they're trying to bring back their fishing rights of how they were taught from their ancestors. And our ancestors didn't have problems with fishing, overfishing and stuff, because they only had one refrigerator, and that was the ocean. And so there's been, since netting and a lot of bad practices and some people with not good intentions overfishing the reefs, they're trying to bring back their own home rule.
Let's go to the hearings, where they're going to be, and any contact information for you. We've got to move on and go to our council report. Go ahead, gentlemen. Where are the hearings going to be next week?
Monday at Kilauea Cafeteria School, Elementary Cafeteria School, at 5:30. Anybody wants to come a little early, Greg and I are going to be there. We can talk story. We're going to have some literature.
Just go to the dates, because we're running out of time.
Tuesday is going to be at Waimea
Middle School. Middle School. At the cafeteria, 5:30.
5:30, and Wednesday at Hanama'ulu, Chief
King Kamali'i.
Yeah, King Kamali'i School at 5:30 also.
And contact information for you, gentlemen? Any way that people can get a hold of you or more about your organization?
Yeah, you could call. I mean, I don't mind putting out my cell number. It's 482-0875, Greg Holzman. So you can call me if you have questions about this. I'm happy to answer anybody's questions.
482-0875. 0875. Great. Thank you, gentlemen, for being here today and for being on Out of the Box, for showing up, and for the hard work you're doing for the community. Thank you, Cousin Rich, for sitting in engineering. Stay tuned for Evolve with Dove. And this is Rick C. for Out of the Box. Aloha.
Aloha, everyone.
Aloha. Aloha, I'm John Gordon for KKCR News. Here's a county council report for the week of April 27th. There will be a special council meeting this week at 8:45 and a council committee meeting at 9. The meetings will be on Wednesday in the council chambers in the historic county building in Lihue. Here's some highlights from the agendas. The purpose of the special meeting is to interview Jeffrey S. Aida, candidate for the Civil Service Commission with a term ending on 12/31/2017. For the committee meeting, the Planning Committee has on their agenda two bills. They are Bill 2571, Draft 1, for an ordinance establishing procedures, development plans, and future growth areas for the Lihue Planning District, and this was deferred from April 1st. Also, Bill 2585, for an ordinance amending the county code relating to the Public Access, Open Space, and Natural Resources Preservation Fund. Public hearing was held on this bill on April 22nd. The Economic Development and Intergovernmental Relations Committee has a request from Committee Chair Ku'uli'i for the Director of Economic Development to provide an update on the proposed operations of the Kilauea Agricultural Center. This was deferred from March 18th. The Budget and Finance Committee has on their agenda Bill 2584 for an ordinance amending the county code relating to real property taxes. This is to reinstate the credit union exemption, and a public hearing was held on this.